It's time for our weekly look at Congress with USA Today politics editor Paul Singer. The House and Senate are still in recess for the rest of August, but the news from the midterm campaign trail continues to flow, and legislators from Wisconsin and around the country are weighing in on topics ranging from the unrest in Ferguson to threats from the Islamic militant group ISIS.
Paul Singer joins us every week at this time to give us the scoop on what our representatives are up to in Washington. Paul, great to have you back with us.
Great to be on. How are you all doing?
Good. Well, the protests in Ferguson are continuing to dominate headlines. President Obama made remarks about the situation on Monday, and Attorney General Eric Holder is in Missouri today. How have members of Congress been responding to the shooting and the subsequent protests there?
You know, the interesting thing has been how particularly presidential candidates or potential presidential candidates have been really flying kind of under the radar here. I mean, I think for lawmakers, the only real practical stance at this point is to call for calm and to urge everybody to de-escalate, if that's a word. But they don't want to get in the middle of this conversation about whether the police officer acted inappropriately, whether Michael Brown, the victim here, was engaged in some sort of criminal activity, whatever. It is all best for politicians to simply, you know, pray for America and say, let's all wait and see what the facts show us. Because I think there's a real danger for any politician of getting out in front of this thing and saying something stupid or something that turns out particularly later not to be true.
Or, yeah, look stupid after the fact. But what about those? I can understand maybe the president or maybe a Wisconsin lawmaker not wanting to comment on a situation in Missouri. But what about Missouri lawmakers and the senators there, the representatives there? Do they have more of an obligation and a responsibility to get on the forefront and to try to at least assemble some kind of constructive community dialogue about it?
Well, yeah, but again, part of that is, you know, a lot of the lawmakers, you know, obviously, if you don't directly represent that area, you're going to stay away. And at that point, now the question is, well, what should the governor do about it? What should the state do about it? I think folks have largely supported the governor's decision to send the National Guard there to try and you know, reestablish calm. It looks like maybe that's been a little more successful. Last night was not as bad. You know, I think we are still in a kind of breaking crisis mode. There is not a lot that people can do, but I think there will be a lot of opportunity to talk about, you know, what are the underlying tensions here that are creating this problem in this community. You know, there are a lot of folks asking questions about whether we should still be sending this much military hardware to local police departments. Is that inappropriate? Is it too much? I think we've already seen people promising to introduce legislation or hold hearings to reconsider arming local police departments to the teeth. That kind of stuff on a policy level you can talk about. But I don't think there's a whole lot you can do at this moment in Ferguson.
And do you predict that some of those conversations and those issues will become part of the campaign trail come 2016?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. There will be conversations about, in fact, there's already a petition at the White House with 100,000 signatures on it to, you know, require police to start wearing cameras so that you're always tracking the police activity. You'll see other folks trying to push legislation to, again, you know, reconsider whether we need to be sending this much military hardware to the police. I suspect you'll have a whole series of conversations about, you know, what are the appropriate steps and required steps for the National Guard and for state responses, this kind of stuff. There'll be a lot of it.
Well, we mentioned last week, moving on now, we mentioned last week that you would be following up on the GOP Senate primary in Alaska that was decided yesterday. So it sounds like former Alaska Attorney General Dan Sullivan won that primary. Is that what you expected?
Yeah, pretty much. The question was only going to be whether Sarah Palin's endorsement late last week of Joe Miller was going to tip the balance at all. Joe Miller is kind of a Tea Party active kind of fellow, and with Sarah Palin's support in 2010, sorry, I get my years messed up here, he actually beat the sitting Republican Senator Lisa Murkowski in the GOP primary, which was a huge upset. And Lisa Murkowski then, despite the fact that her name is hard to spell, ran a write-in campaign and won the Senate seat back, which is fairly dramatic. So Joe Miller has been sort of wandering around in the wilderness since then, and Palin endorsed him for this race. And the question was whether that would be enough to push him over the top. In the end, it wasn't. Sullivan had all of the establishment Republican money behind him, and he is considered, I think, the tougher candidate for the Democrats to handle in the fall. The Democrats really wanted to run against Joe Miller because they think he's easier to paint as an extremist.
Mm. Well, and the word is that this is one of the races that will decide which party takes the Senate this fall. Now that we know who the Republican contender is, are there any further predictions on who's going to take that seat and what how it might affect the Senate as a whole?
Well, it's a very close race. We expect a very close race between Senator Begich, the incumbent, and Dan Sullivan. We expect that it'll spend historic levels for a Senate race in Alaska. I believe the current estimates have been that $8 million already been spent in this race. And so it is going to be a barn burner. And, yeah, this is one of a half dozen races that will determine whether Republicans or Democrats control the Senate next year. There will be an enormous amount of national attention, which is funny because it's a tiny little state, really. You know, there's not a whole lot of people up there. So they have an opportunity to have an outsized impact on the national politics.
Is it drawing a lot of out-of-state money into Alaska?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, lots and lots. Every major organization, left and right, will be spending a lot of money on. Of course, the challenge with Alaska is there's only so much advertising dollars you can spend. There's only a couple of TV stations. There's not like, you know, what can you do other than, you know, fly people up there and put them on the ground and start knocking on doors and drag them to the polls.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that's something that you'll be keeping your eye on throughout the season, and we'll keep checking in on that. On the topic of fall elections, a new USA Today Suffolk University poll found that in North Carolina, 62% of voters in North Carolina see their votes for legislators as votes for or against Obama. What does that tell us about how elections are going to go this fall?
It's a really interesting finding, and I think it speaks particularly for Republicans that, you know, if you can make this race about Obama, if you can make a Senate race about Obama, you are going to paint the Democratic senator or Senate candidate with some of the unhappiness that folks feel about the Obama administration. Obama's popularity is very low to start with, and things have not been going particularly well for the administration recently, and there's still some lingering anger about Obamacare, the health care law. So to the degree you make this a national referendum on Obama, it really works to, we believe, to drive people away from the polls, drive Democratic voters away from the polls. What was interesting also about this thing is that even the Republicans even the Democrats see it as a referendum on Obama. They believe they have to vote for Kay Hagan, in this case, in North Carolina, to support Obama, which is, again, very, very interesting. I think the Democrats in general will benefit from making this a local race, making it about what's best for our state and what's best for the issues on the ground. But it is very clear that for some proportion of the population, they believe, particularly the Democratic base voter and the Republican base voter, they believe this is all about voting for the guy who will either support or oppose Obama.
And isn't that the strategy that was taken in 2010?
And in 2010, of course, the advantage was for Republicans in general was this sort of, there's this huge Tea Party wave that everybody was unhappy. They were happy about the government, they're taxed too much, the economy was in the tank. So they were able to really nationalize the emotion of dissatisfaction. Of course, the problem is that they unleashed a movement that they can't even really organize themselves. They're having all kinds of trouble with those same people now in Congress, getting them to vote for stuff that they need to pass.
Mm-hmm. Well, here in Wisconsin, Senator Ron Johnson is back, and he's in the state for a recess, and he announced that starting today, he will be holding town meetings to warn Wisconsinites about the threat to the U.S. of the Islamic militant group ISIS,
who
we've been hearing about in the news. Some say he's fear-mongering. Others say it's his duty as a member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. How does this response compare to other members of Congress?
You know, that's the first I've seen. I saw that today. I was like, he seems, honestly, it's a little out ahead of where everybody else is. I mean, I think it is not clear that there is a direct threat to the United States from ISIS at this point. However, it is clear that this is the group that we are most concerned about sort of taking over from al-Qaeda and becoming the real international terrorist group. I would be very interested to see and hear sort of what he offers at these town halls and what kind of suggestions he's making. My suspicion is he's more concerned about Americans traveling abroad than he is about attacks on the homeland here in the U.S. And again, this is a little further out there than I think a lot of the rest of the country is, especially our leaders, are willing to go to really suggest that we focus on the concern, the direct threat to Americans. But it's clearly this is the new face of international terror that Americans need to be worried about.
And on the other hand, in our last 30 seconds here, is his role on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee giving him some information that maybe no one else has?
It's possible. I'd be more interested to hear what the Intelligence Committee says, but they won't tell us. But sure, I mean, I think the senator obviously has a concern, and I'd be really interested to hear his concern. And the question is, you know, exactly how far that concern needs to go, and does he really think it's time for Americans to panic or just take caution?
Mm-hmm. Well, Paul, thank you again for being with us today.
Hey, my pleasure, and have a great day.
You too. We've been speaking with USA Today Politics editor Paul Singer. He joins us every week at this time with the latest from Congress.